Welcome to Two Chicks and a Horror Flick, a weekly horror movie review podcast. I'm Tawny Ray.
And I'm Felicia Connor. Subscribe to get new episodes every Wednesday. We dive into trivia, drink a little whiskey, and of course, give our no BS opinions.
Join our Discord server or message us on social media to talk all things scary.
And if you like the show, consider supporting us on Patreon.
You can find all these links on our website, twochicksandahorrorflick.com. Thanks for listening.
Now let's get scared.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about the 2016 film, A Dark Song. But before we get into all that, Felicia, hello.
Hi. Good to see you.
I know. Good to see you, too. In a new location recording.
If you're yes. Watching on YouTube. I tried to make it look pretty, and it's my bedroom. It may look like a mess right over here, but this is just all my yoga things. And if you actually were looking at it straight on, it's quite organized.
Okay.
I just realized behind me it looks like a little mess. But oh, actually, probably no one will be able to see it because you, Tawny, always makes the video tighter.
Not anymore. I used to, but.
Oh, nice. Okay. Oh, yeah. You know what? I did notice that on the last one.
Yeah, but it is kind of small. So like you can't really see because I put us next to each other and it's, yeah, hard to see smaller stuff. But it looks organized to me.
Okay, good. Because it is.
Yeah. And I like your plant.
Thank you. I love her. She's called a raindrop plant.
Ooh.
She is one of three plants that I have been able to keep alive.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. That's something. My plants are not doing so hot. I've got
a little sprig over there in the corner.
Yeah, this thing is like, what is that called? This is like a snake plant. And like, I think it's really hard to kill. And so that thing's doing okay over there. But I have a money plant that I really want to keep alive. And it's not doing a good job. It sits right behind my laptop, which is why I keep looking up at it. But I don't know what to do for it. Like, I'm just totally lost when it comes to taking care of plants. So I'm like, just hang on, I guess.
Can I tell you that I killed my snake plant?
Oh, did you?
I'm not sure. It is spiky, but it has like these different colors on the leaves.
Mine doesn't. It's a little like lined. But anyway, that makes me feel better.
Yeah. Yeah, I only have the raindrop plant, the ZZ plant, and then I have some big green leafy plant. That's it.
Okay. I'm impressed with these people out here keeping lots of plants alive. I just can't. But anyway, what are you drinking?
I'm just drinking lemon water. We did go out with our neighbors to some lunch at we had a little Mexican food, and I did have a margarita.
Ooh, nice.
I only had one, though, and I really wanted another one, but we all had one. And then when the waitress came back, they said, would you like another round? And the neighbors went, no, I'm good. And so then it's like,
you're like,
I'm good too.
Yeah.
Even though before they got there, me and Steve were talking that we wanted to each get a margarita and then try their little flight of margaritas that you can get in different flavors.
Oh, cool.
So we were going to do that. We were going to do that. But they said no. And then I felt self-conscious.
Yeah. And then you're like, can't do it now.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then I thought of drinking right before we sat down together. And I was like, ugh, I'll just grab water. So there's my story about what I'm drinking. How about you?
Nice. Love it. I am drinking water, but also right before hopping on, I drank a Magic Mind. Of course.
Yeah.
This has been super helpful, dude, just because I have really been wanting a little extra focus. You know, we've talked about it a lot, but it's so helpful for just that little bit of extra focus for the work week, but also for the weekend, like doing our podcast, you know, like you still want to be focused and just feel super clear and present for those things as well. And so one of the ingredients that's in here is Rhodiola rosea, which is a nootropic and an adaptogen that reduces fatigue and anxiety and increases your body's resistance to stress and enhances mental clarity. So it's been perfect for that. Thanks, Magic Mind, for your weekend podcast help. So you've heard us talk about this a lot. If you want to check it out, you can go to magicmind.com/JanTuchiks, JanTuchiks, and use the promo code TUCHIKS20. So that's TUCHIKS20.
Enjoy.
Enjoy. And definitely could be used for a little bit of mental clarity if you're trying to do some serious, lengthy rituals, just like we're going to talk about from A Dark Song. So,
oh, you're right. That's a really good little plug. They could have absolutely used like a year supply of this stuff
for an 18-month long.
Yeah.
Ritual. Well, I don't think they said that in the movie, but I got some trivia about that later. But anyway.
Nice.
Yeah. So Felicia, what have you been up to, doing, watching, listening to? Tell me all your updates.
I have been working a lot. Okay. And so I haven't watched a lot. So I've been working. And then also I picked up that yoga teacher training again, because I had already got the course. And yeah. I got about 30% through. And then all of last year, and I don't know what initiated this or triggered this, but I had completely fallen off my practice. And I was thinking, I hadn't practiced yoga in the entirety of last year. I don't think did even one sequence. Maybe. Wow. That's a lot of days for me to remember exactly what I did, but definitely don't remember doing, and definitely not regular, and definitely didn't add anything to the course that I was doing. And I just been hearing like constant little nag, Felicia, come on, do it, do it, do it.
Yeah.
And so I got back in and, reading, studying, but it was like a big awakening because I was like, oh, I'm going to do this one yoga flow with this teacher called, her name is Skylar Grant, I believe. And she's with Commune, which is like the platform.
Right.
And I loved it. And it's like you move to music. So it's your breath and the music. Ooh. And it all goes together. I loved it. I was obsessed with it. So I turned it on. I'm like, here I go. Oh my God. I feel like I am actually starting from the beginning. All the strength I'd built in like my wrists and stuff was not there. I couldn't do it. And the flexibility I'd started to build in like my hamstrings and the back of my legs and stuff. Nope. Like all of that is gone. So I went back to, she has like a 21-day yoga to like where you go in slowly and you do the different poses and stuff like that. So I'm gonna have to start from the beginning. So that's, I've been cool doing though. That, but yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
I bet you would like that.
I would. Not, I'm very interested because I tried that one yoga thing. I think I had sent it to you and I can't remember the name of it, but it was like a yoga studio that does incorporate music, but like contemporary music. So like hip hop or whatever you want to listen to, pop music. But it wasn't, I don't know. It wasn't exactly what I was like hoping for. It was a little too hard for me. So, yeah.
Yeah, she had, yeah, this one, because you've been doing yoga, right? You've been working out and doing, so,
yeah.
Right? You've been going to a yoga studio, right? I think.
Yeah, we have yoga classes at our, like, gym that we will go to. Like, we went to a slow flow yoga this week. So, we haven't been as consistent, though, with that as we'd like to be, but.
But you haven't skipped a year of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think I'd be better at it now trying it. Yeah.
And a year ago, I was not advanced level. I had just become stronger through practice, stronger than I normally am. So I bet you could do this one because I was able to do it, even with me still not being super flexible. And so.
Yeah. Neat.
Nice. Hey. So I've been doing that and working, finishing up projects, but we did watch. Okay. So one night I binged Dance Life. It's on Prime and it's about the Brent Street Dance School. I just love seeing people who are so obsessed with one thing that they put everything into it to master it. Yeah. And these dancers, these kids, like this school, they can go in like elementary school all the way through high school. Okay. And the majority of it is dance. And then there's some normal study, right? Because when you graduate, you do have a high school diploma, but they didn't show that piece of it. And just them putting their all and how they move is super inspiring. It was really beautiful. I loved it. And then me and Steve sat by each other and read through all 75 pages of the P. Diddy affidavit.
Okay. Okay.
We're so curious.
I have like no idea what's going on. I know that there's something
crazy
happening.
Crazy.
And sex trafficking or something. I don't know. Cuba Gooding Jr. was involved somehow, but I've only seen like headlines here and there. I have no idea.
We read the whole affidavit. So we know what's going on.
You got it.
It is insane.
Interesting.
The last thing I watched, we watched it last night. It was a 1989 movie called Always. And it had Holly Hunter and Richard Dreyfuss and John Goodman. And Steve was like, oh, if you want a good romantic comedy, you have to watch this, Felicia. I will say I cried and it was a lovely idea, but Steve and I were talking about it today because it felt like it dragged a lot. We realized it didn't blend the different things they were doing very nicely. You had this beautiful dramatic love story about a woman. And maybe if you want to watch it, I won't say anything else about it, but it was beautiful. And then there was a lot of this slapstick comedy weirdness. And then there was almost like this epic dance scene that was unnecessary. So there was too many elements where if you peeled that all away and left it as this kind of romantic comedy, meaning like they can have some witty banter, but this really pretty idea, it would have been a lot better, but I did like it. It was sweet.
Okay. It was called Always, right?
Always. Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. That's all. Interesting. That's my life. It was Purim, which is a Jewish holiday. We celebrated that.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask.
Past weekend.
Okay.
Yes. And it was a lot of fun. It's just like overindulgence. And I shouldn't say that. It's just merriment, eating and drinking and having fun, giving to charity, giving gifts of food to other people. And that was a lot of fun. And then next month we're heading into Passover, which is like big.
Oh, okay. I was wondering. I have no idea. Is Easter a thing?
No, for Christians and other folk, all folk, like, because it's such a commercial holiday now.
Yeah, totally.
Like, I don't even think you need to be a religion, but no, Passover or Pesach, that is what happens around Easter. Sometimes it falls right on Easter, but this year it's at the end of April.
Oh, so got it. Okay.
Don't celebrate Easter.
Got it. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay.
So I'm sticking to it. It's my life. I'm sticking to it. So, how about you?
Purim. P. Diddy.
Yeah. And Purim and P. Diddy.
And Passover.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so I haven't been doing shit either because it's been so busy at work. So I only have one thing to report. We started watching Shogun, and I don't think I said that last time, right?
No. I don't think so.
Okay, that's on Hulu. It's like, I think it's from FX. And it's really good. We've only seen a few episodes. They're pretty long. Like, each episode is like an hour plus. Like, the first episode is like an hour and 10 minutes, I think, or something. Like, they're really long episodes. And it takes a minute to understand what's going on. It took us three whole episodes, I think, to feel like we were kind of getting what's going on politically. But it's really good and we're really liking it. So I'll keep you updated on how that goes. But it's the first thing that I've watched that feels like Game of Thrones to me in like a cool political like way, but it's not like feeding you all of the information up front. Like, you have to kind of hang in and pay attention and just be along for the ride to understand what's going on, rather than, you know, sometimes shows kind of just give you all of what you need up front. So it's kind of like a commitment, but that's how Game of Thrones was. Like, I had to watch like two whole fucking seasons of Game of Thrones twice to like understand what was going on. Like, I had to rewatch. But it's such an awesome and complex story. So I'm excited about that, to see where that goes. And the acting and stuff is really good. So
what is it like basically like about, or the backdrop? I'm or the backdrop like, of it.
I'm probably going to like fuck up the time period on this because I don't know if this is like totally correct, but I want to say it's like feudal Japan.
Okay.
I don't know if that's the right time period for real, but it's like there's this emperor who has died, and since he's died, there's been infighting amongst like five of the council people. And so we're kind of following, I mean, the way that you actually get into the show is you're following a pirate who is on a ship that sails to Japan, and they were trying to get there because they knew that Portugal was doing trade with Japan and keeping that secret. And so no one else had like, I mean, people had probably sailed to Japan before, but they were like blocking all trade from other people. And so that's how you get into the show, is we follow that pirate in and they capture him, and there's like a big language barrier. So they like are trying to figure it out. But then it becomes a big thing, and he kind of becomes a pawn a little bit for the people who pick him up. But yeah, it's good.
Okay. Nice. Who's in it? Or who's some of the main peeps?
I have no idea.
Okay.
The only one that I think I've seen in other stuff is the pirate guy, and I don't remember his name. It's something weird, though. It's like Cosmic something is his name. But he was in Peaky Blinders. He's kind of like Jade and I were joking. He's kind of like a discount Tom Hardy. Like,
okay.
I'll have to find a picture of this guy.
I'm going to have to look him up.
He's like the Wish version of Tom Hardy. Anyway.
Do you say that's Witch? Witch?
Oh, Wish. Do you remember Wish? Wish.com? Okay. That came and went. It came and went really fast. But it was like a online retailer where you buy stuff really, really cheap, and it was...
Oh! Okay, got like it.
Really shitty stuff. Anyway. Yeah, so that's really the only thing of note. And then yeah, I've been working out, so
good. That's girl
been good. Yeah, I'm actually kind of starting to like it a little bit, which is nice. Jade and I started going to, there's like a power circuit class on Tuesdays. I was going to bar class on Tuesdays, and I still like that. It's one of my favorite classes, but it fills up sometimes. So we've been doing the power circuit class, which is like just all weight stuff, you know, you're just like lifting weights, pumping iron. So Jade and I keep talking about how we're going to get swole.
That is so cool. Yeah, I know that once I get into it and start feeling stronger, it is addictive. I used to exercise religiously, jog every single day, and it feels really good. It's just getting into it and building that routine and getting to the part where you're like, ooh, you know what? I really like this.
Yeah, totally. And I like how... I like how the weightlifting that we do in that class is pretty like, I don't know how to say it. It's like, it's kind of anatomy focused because you are kind of working out like one thing at a time. So you can focus on like, am I feeling that where I'm supposed to be feeling it? And it's very like routine, like you're doing it over and over again. And we do the same thing all month. So you can like go up in weight or go down every time you come back because you're like at your own little station. And so that's nice. I feel like I've gotten to the point now where I'm like, yeah, this is pretty cool. I kind of like it. And I actually have gotten to the point where I've been like a little sore, but not too sore. So it's like a good balance. So that's awesome. Hopefully we're trying to get up to going consistently like three times a week, like two like weightlifting type classes and one yoga class. So that we're also stretching, because there's not a lot of stretching outside of the yoga classes.
That's very cool. It's cool you guys could do it together too. Like Steve is not interested in doing anything like that. So it's on my own. I have to find that initiative within myself.
Yeah, that's fair. Jade is like the only guy in classes ever. And people are always like, oh, I wish my husband would come and do these classes.
Yeah.
But he's like, I like the classes. So
that's fun. Cool.
Yeah, but that's it for me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Successes. We both have had some successes. We both have had some successes.
Yes. Yeah. We're doing some active stuff, which is good. So.
Yes. So good.
Oh, so excited for fucking spring. We like did a little walk today around our like block. And that, I was just like, this is going to be so nice. So excited.
It's spring for us right now, really. Like, it's beautiful outside.
Yeah.
And then it's very rapidly going to become obscenely hot.
So. Too hot. Yeah. I think it's like, I don't even know. It's like, it's just getting kind of warm here. Like, it was cold kind of all week. And today, I think it was probably like 60, 66 or something. So
nice.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, should we get into it? Should we get into this movie?
Let's do it.
Okay.
I'm gonna pull up my notes while you start.
Perfect. Okay. So we're talking about A Dark Song, if you forgot, from 2016. But I think it's obvious why I chose this, because it, like, the offering reminded me of this a lot. And I think now that you've watched it, you can see why.
Yes.
Okay. So the director was Liam Gavin. This was his directorial debut as far as at least feature film length. He had done a handful of shorts, but this is really his only movie. Like, he's directed a couple episodes of The Haunting of Bly Manor, but I thought this was a pretty impressive first directorial debut.
Mm-hmm.
As far as cast, I only just did our two main people. We've got Steve Oram as Joseph Solomon and Catherine Walker as Sophia. For scores, Rotten Tomatoes gives it a 91%, IMDb 6.2 out of 10, and 3.3 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
Okay.
So, big difference. I could not find budget numbers, but I think it's really super low budget. Like, I remember, I thought I had remembered seeing 50,000 somewhere. I don't know if I just made that up in my head, but I couldn't find the number again when I was researching. I did find a box office number on IMDb, which said 23,000. So, but I don't know how accurate that is. So. And I forgot to grab a summary. So I'll just wing it real quick. So, A Dark Song is about a grieving mother who has lost her child and seeks out a ritual and someone to perform that ritual to be able to, she says, speak to her son. And I'm going to spoil it, so turn back now if you don't want this movie spoiled for you, but we find out through the process that she doesn't actually want to speak to him. She wants to exact revenge on the people who killed her son. And she obviously feels guilty herself also for his death. And so they go through this grueling ritual process for her to be able to ask a favor of her guardian angel. And she is successful, I would say.
Yes. So,
since this is my pick, how did you feel about this movie?
Tanya, I really liked this movie. I thought this was a really, it was a really interesting and cool movie. Yeah. I really liked it. I liked how she said things like, she was like, I've studied the Kabbalah. And I'm like, oh, there's like a, oh, that's cool. There's a Jewish element. He's like, it's not the Kabbalah. It is not the Sefer and all of that. And I could see by the drawing they put on the ground. And so it was really cool to hear this, like the progression and the, I just loved all the ritual and religious and spiritual and all these different things that they pulled in to create this world. It was very cool. I will say the only thing is, once I saw those demon people, I didn't really like them that much.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. They didn't really scare me. And I was like, what's happening? But everything else I did, everything else I really liked.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's right. And I can't wait for, this is one of those movies where I'm thinking I can't wait for the research.
Yeah, I am excited to get into that. I read a lot, and so I think most of my like responses are going to be a little bit like more paraphrasey. I pulled some things that I'll read exactly, but yeah, I went down a rabbit hole a little bit on Aleister Crowley, and so I have now a lot of things about that. But hopefully I'm able to tell you things that are interesting and that you want to know. But good. I'm so glad. I thought watching it, I was like, I'd be willing to bet money that Felicia likes this movie, because I feel like mm-hmm. there's just a lot of things that we both enjoy. And because the movie takes itself really seriously, and there is this like really awesome backdrop of history of ritual and religion and religions. Like there's a lot of kind of crossover type stuff.
Oh yeah. Like this whole archangel idea and like spirit guides. Yeah. All of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was like, I think she's going to like this. I agree totally that like towards the end of the movie, that's where you really start to see the low budget nature of the film come through. And so that I agree. The first time I watched it, I didn't really love the end. I was like, that was a great fucking movie, but I didn't love where we ended up. And rewatching it, I still kind of feel that way, but I still really enjoy it. I think it's a really refreshing movie. I think you really don't get this level of dedication to something like this. It feels like we are being exposed to this like dark, you know, magic / ritual that is dangerous to be playing with. And I mm-hmm. love that about mm-hmm. it. And there actually are real consequences. And so for a long time, I feel like you're watching the movie and you're thinking, man, nothing's going to happen. And this is just two people isolating in a fucked up situation. And the guy leading it ends up dying in the house, and she can't leave because that's like part of the ritual. And so you're thinking like this, that's going to be the end of this movie. There's not going to be anything supernatural that happens. So I don't hate where it goes, but it's like you definitely see the low budget nature of it at the end. I feel like it could have been cooler if there were like different things, if they had chosen to represent things visually in a different way. But in the end, I still just enjoy the process of watching this movie. I think it's really great.
Yes, I agree with you. I like where you're a little bit confused, or not confused, sorry. You're a little skeptical on, is this guy
yeah.
just taking her for a ride? But then yeah. I'm like, well, this is a lot of dedication he's putting into just getting this money when he left. And he did try to leave originally thinking, oh, this isn't a good reason to do it. And then I thought, well, maybe he did that just to make her beg and offer him more money. And then I was going back and forth. And then when the gold flakes came out of the ceiling, I was like, oh, wait, okay. Okay, this isn't fake. Or is she hallucinating because she's taking mushrooms? And so I was just going back and forth and back and forth. I'd say I did really like the end. I loved that angel, that depiction of the angel. He was so large and neat. He was so neat looking. It made me feel like when I saw Prometheus and saw the Anunnaki and how they, oh gosh, I just loved it. I love this freaking angel. And I loved that it was almost like through this whole process, she thought she was getting something she wanted, which is vengeance, which is easy, yeah. easy for us to want. It's like the easiest thing to be negative and want bad things and to fall into yeah, that. That is easy. But to forgive is freaking the hardest thing. And so she went through this whole thing thinking that she was going to be getting this vengeance from these people, but then getting through it all, she wanted forgiveness, which is so incredibly powerful. So I thought all of that was beautiful. Just those people, like, what is it? They're just lower elements. And I don't know. When I saw them for the first time, I was like, who's that?
Yeah.
First, I was like, who's that supposed to be? Is that the person that killed her son? Or is that? And then it was like, oh, it's just maybe lower elemental people that if she didn't try to get away from them, she would have become one of them. But I don't know what it, I was like, whatever.
Yeah, I got the impression it's supposed to kind of be like demons or, you know, bad spirit. Or beings like dragging her to hell, basic, like kind of, and you don't really know, like at the end of the movie, we physically see these things, but it could be a representation of what she's dealing with emotionally and inside. That could be a read on the movie, but I think that like seeing it is cool. I felt like there was not, I couldn't get, like, I don't know. The first watch, I didn't like the ending because I felt like it kind of came out of nowhere. There wasn't anything along the journey of her doing this that helped her figure out how to forgive. And maybe that's the point, is that she is able to ask that favor. But why did she want that, I guess, is...
Yeah, because the only mention of forgiveness is when she's with her sister in the restaurant. And she, oh no, twice. Something with her sister in the restaurant, she can't move on. And then the man, she said, I don't do forgiveness. So instead she chose the blood sacrifice.
Yeah.
Which seems dark in and of itself versus trying to go the forgiveness route. So if she would have chose forgiveness, okay, let me try forgiveness, then what would have been the... I guess the point is that she didn't. So,
right. Well, and I watched a video where somebody did mention that potentially her being dragged to the, like, you know, hellish basement, and they cut off a finger. So they start to torture her and they cut a finger off. And the person kind of asserts that, like, maybe she realizes that she is in the position of what she's wishing on somebody else. And that's the thing that, like, makes her realize she wants forgiveness. She doesn't actually want vengeance on these people. But I don't get that from the movie. And so I think that is also a, like, potentially a valid read, but it all happens so quick at the end that it just doesn't feel earned to me, like, why she would decide that at the end instead of what she set out to do, which was vengeance or revenge. So I don't know. That's one of my kind of problems at the end. And I wish those people looked better. And I'm glad that you liked the god, because I feel like, again, the first time I watched it, I was like, oh no, that doesn't look very good to me. And I feel like it undid like so much coolness throughout the movie. And I don't know what I wanted that to be, that it wasn't, because I'm like, I like that it's bigger, because that's kind of how it should be, I guess. But it just looks hokey to me. I don't know.
I could see that. I could see it, because when I first saw it, that was my, at first I was like, huh? And then I looked and I was just like, whoa, look at how giant it is, and just not moving, and its position it's in. And then something about it was very, I don't know, dreamy and hallucinative. I don't know if I made that up, but that word. And then I was just like, oh God, I love this. I love it's, and it's so different as well. Because if it was just light, you know.
Yeah, then you're like, yeah.
I want to say back to what you were just saying about the one take on those people. I don't know if I buy that, because you definitely wouldn't want it to happen to you. So if vengeance was going to lead her down this path where she was like, these people are being tortured, then I can see, no, I will do anything. I will forgive them. Please let me out of here before they start chopping off all my fingers. But if people did that to one of my children, I don't know about now someone's torturing me that I'd be like, oh, I don't want anyone to feel this torture. I don't know if I would make that switch. I don't think so.
Yeah, it's a very tiny, minor thing to happen.
Yeah.
For such a big...
To know my child went through that I'm going through, I think would make me even more enraged and disgusted at the people who did it.
Right, totally. Yeah.
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 I'm not buying that one.
Yeah.
But I really did like this whole ritual thing, because what would you do? I mean, you don't know. No idea, no leads whatsoever, and there's a dead end. What do you do next? I also liked that she wanted to talk to her son. I was bought into that storyline. I was so bought, honestly. Okay, I don't know why I said honestly. I'm always being honest with you guys. But when she went, "You're right. What I want is vengeance." I was like, okay. I thought it was quite powerful, the guilt angle, and that she wanted to be able to apologize to her son
not
picking him up. It was her, and he died. That, I think, is more powerful than just, no, I want vengeance and I want these people to die. Because then the whole aspect of, because I got confused there for a minute. Remember the little boy starts to talk to her and she goes, "You're not him." And I'm like, wait a second. I thought this is what you wanted. I thought you wanted to talk to him. But now you're saying you're not him. Okay. Like, what's the goal?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I liked that because I felt like she, it wasn't a lie that she wanted to talk to her child necessarily. And that's why I think she talks to the being knowing that it's not her son, because it feels kind of like she's talking to him and it sounds like his voice. And so she has like a full conversation kind of with the son twice, knowing that it's not him and acknowledging that. And I think
she does apologize, you're right, to that voice. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're good. So I think she just, I don't think that's like not a motivation at all.
Yeah.
But her bigger motivation is definitely revenge.
Yeah. I do want to say one thing that made me giggle. Okay. She towards the beginning, she preps for months. She disowns her family. She begs him to do it, brings him back, gives him like tons of money, tells her sister to F off. Don't ever talk to me again. I am doing this. Then as soon as they seal the house, she starts questioning everything. Is this going to work? Is this, well, I don't want to do this. Well, why don't you do it? I'm like, dude, I know what the rules are as the viewer. Like, as soon as he seals the house, she is challenging everything. And it just made me giggle. How absolutely nuts you would, after going through this whole thing, you have to do it again. You're locked in this house. You're going through, can I really leave? Is this bullshit? Can I just step across? And you are thinking the same. Can she just leave or not leave?
Yeah.
You know, really, what's the truth? I get all that. But this was literally, the sun didn't even go down yet. And she's in the kitchen, like challenging him on everything. I was like,
I don't remember it happening that fast, but that is kind of funny.
It was like right
away.
She just said, is it going to work? Well, how long? Well, when? Well, why do we need to do that? Well, and I'm just like, girl,
yeah,
we haven't even started.
You read up on it. You know,
you know how
this is going to go.
Yes. Yeah. I did like how they utilized the entire house.
Yeah.
As it wasn't only the thing on the floor, but it was the entire house was a part of this like journey through these different portals or dimensions or processes, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, it's like so procedural, I guess is a word that I was trying to grab earlier. Like there's such a process and it's so lengthy and there's so much to it. And like, I love when he's walking her through and he's like, this room is the room of death. And this room is the room of, I don't remember what he says, but he's like, this is where you're going to like get your resolve. You're going to come in here to like strengthen yourself.
Feel sane.
Yes.
Remind yourself you're not going insane.
Yeah. Which was really interesting. And I felt like there was probably a connection to the rooms and the things that were happening in the different rooms. And I wanted to watch from that perspective, but I wasn't really able to fully like pay attention to that. So I'd love to rewatch and see if there was, because a lot of the, I don't know, I feel like the rooms start to blur together a little bit. And so I kind of don't know which one is which, or I wasn't able to tell right away which one was which, but there are some distinctive factors. Like I did notice that every time that they have a really serious conversation, they're in the room with the red couches or red, it's like there's like a red blanket maybe draped over him, but I couldn't tell actually like what room that is. So there's a little bit of confusion, but I think that's an interesting concept. And I bet there was more intention put in that than I'm giving it credit for, or maybe not that I'm giving it credit for, but that I was able to pay attention to.
I'm on the same page as you. I thought, ooh, what room was this? No idea.
Yeah. No,
because they're in the room when he's talking about what the room is for. And a lot of, besides that, when she's talking to him, but when the beasts are in there and stuff, or she's hearing noises, it's from the hallway. And so yeah. I didn't know which room was where in this house, but I agree. I think maybe what was happening was related to what rooms. Definitely the angel room.
Yeah, there definitely. He was.
He appeared yeah. in his room. In his
he did say that.
Circle spot. Yeah.
In the beginning. He said yeah. he will appear right here.
Yeah.
And he does.
And he does.
Yeah.
I loved their relationship and this craziness. And at first, okay, so when I watched the trailer with Steve because he wanted to see if he wanted to watch it with me. He did not. But at the end of the trailer, he said, you're going to love that.
Yeah, totally.
And so I loved that relationship between them and that confusion of like, is he just like taking her for a ride? And like, and then when he asked her to take off her clothes, so that whole, oh, now we have to do sex magic. I'm like, okay, I don't think that, I mean, this is very dedicated just to be weird and perverted with this woman. And I said, well, maybe if he has no home, right?
Yeah.
And she's paying him and whatever. But then he just jerks off and I'm like, oh, definitely not. Because she was willing to let him go all the way. And yeah. he didn't. So I really liked that where I was kind of going back and forth. And then so at the point when he dies and she steps across. So they show her feet and the line. And I'm like, gosh, that'd be crazy. Because you would have in the back of your mind where maybe. And then she stepped across it. And I'm like, oh, shit, we're about to find out.
I know. Yeah. I also was like, even rewatching it, I was like, I can't remember if she actually ends up leaving or not. Like, and then she just goes for it. Oh,
yeah.
You're not supposed to do that.
And then she's walking, and I'm waiting. And then through the trees, you see that window. And I went, oh, shit.
I wondered. I was like, is Felicia going to know? Yes. Is she going to see this shot and know that she's going to be back at the house?
I was like, yeah. Oh, man, he was right. She's stuck here.
The classic. You can't leave.
Oh,
I love
great.
It. Yeah, I love too. One of those. That's one of my favorite like tropes, I think, of all horror movies is you try to leave, but you end up in the same place. Yeah, I love this part of the movie, too. They both feel like such real people.
Mm-hmm.
It gives the movie such a level of groundedness, even though they're doing something so, not based in reality, kind of. I mean, it is a real thing. We'll get into that. But, they give the movie such weight as mm-hmm. people. And Jade mentioned he had watched this the first time with me, and he also likes this movie a lot. He was like, this is one of the best depictions I can think of a wizard, right? Because this guy like is technically a wizard of some kind, right? He practices magic, but he's like your everyday person. And I watched an interview with him and the director, and that's what drew him to the script, is he was like, he is this like, you know, practicer, or I don't know.
Practitioner.
Thank you. of this, but he's just like a regular guy. And I also couldn't put my finger on why I like him as a character, because he's kind of fucking mean and volatile and you don't know what he's going to do. But somehow you get the sense that he's not a bad guy, and he really doesn't want to be doing anything intentionally to hurt her or really anybody. I mean, maybe that could be debated because he's there. He's willing to let her get revenge on people, but like for a bad thing, you know. But I couldn't actually look back to the movie and point to anything that told me he was a really good guy. And so I'm glad that you brought that example up, because I think that is a good example. Is like, yeah, he's definitely taking advantage of the situation and being weird, but he like could have gone so much further with it and he didn't.
Yeah, he was really, I really liked this, because you're absolutely right. He seems so unlikable.
Yeah.
But I was wondering, is he really not mean? He is screaming at her and stuff, but it reminded me of, Let me preface. If anyone knows who Ruby Frankie is, this true crime story going on right now, I watched a ton of body cam footage. I listened to some podcast where they read her entire journal. Her journal, she's nuts and she's a child abuser. I'm not saying she's a good person. Her journal was like what was going on in this movie. She was saying there's evil in her kids and she was going to get it out of them through extreme cold, extreme heat, starvation. It's almost like, the words are not coming to me, but this idea of stripping the person completely of everything so that they can be anew. And, Ruby Frankie is a nut job child abuser. But in this movie, that's what it made me think of, that he is screaming at her. He's taking away her arrogance, her selfishness, her sense of identity in general. He's stripping her of everything so that she could be an empty vessel to receive. And so I'd wondered if that's why he was screaming at her, not necessarily because he was just hot tempered.
Yeah.
But because that's part of it, this constant berating. So
yeah, that's kind of what I get from it as well. Is like you get while he's doing it, that it's not really that he like wants to be do it. Like it's not that he is, like you're saying, like lashing out at her. It's that he must do it from his own experience. And the only moment that I can really think of that I can say clearly is I think it's when he goes in and stands there before he wakes her up and kills her, basically to get drowns her, because he realizes that she's been lying about what she wants to be doing. And so he's like, we have to purify you and we have to like start over to some degree. So he drowns her and then revives her.
That was intense.
But I think it's that moment where he goes and he stands there for a second before he wakes her up. And just that pause was like enough to tell me as a viewer, he doesn't want to do, he's not doing this out of anger for her. He's doing it because he feels like it's the only option that they have to continue moving through it.
Yes.
And like what? I just feel like this is such a testament to the direction and the acting that we feel like this about this Solomon guy all the way through is like, he's doing something in the moment to tell us that he doesn't want to be doing this, even though he's doing it. And nobody ever has to say that. This movie does a pretty damn good job of show, don't tell.
Yes.
I think it's like really good for the most part at that. And so, I don't know, I loved that bit of it.
Here's a great example, and I don't want, like, people to come after me, so I'm going to try to really explain this well. The non-sex sexual scene.
Yeah.
Wow, what conflicting feelings I had, right? Because he mentions having sex magic, or she mentions it. She actually calls it sex magic, but I'm like, oh, he doesn't really need to be doing this. So I thought, ooh, and we're verging on he is being creepy, but he's going to really take advantage of her and convince her that she has to do this sex magic when really do they? I doubt it, because wasn't he going on and on about how she needs to be pure? Well, so he has her take off her clothes. He's looking at her and he masturbates. And then he's like, okay, put on your clothes. So he did absolutely take sexual advantage of her 100%. And I felt a little bad-ish for him. Like he was like, I needed that to like purify, or like something about his soul, his mind, Like he needed to get... he needed to get his mind right. So he needed a release in this way, but he also seemed ashamed. And then he also could have went a lot further. She was ready to give him whatever he would ask for. And he didn't cross that line.
Yeah.
So it was all of these conflicting feelings, like what he did was wrong, but then he didn't, it was just a weird, I felt a lot of feelings.
Totally. Yeah, I agree. And it's funny that you picked up that it wasn't something that they needed to do right away. I don't think I did. And even rewatching it, I thought that they did have sex just because he mentions early in the process, you know, this is going to involve X, Y, and Z. And one of the things that he says is ritual sex. So I was like, even rewatching prepared for that to happen at some point. But yeah, I didn't immediately get that he didn't.
I missed that because I was focused on how he was telling her leading up to it, she couldn't have sex, couldn't even masturbate, nothing. So I was carrying that into the ritual, this aesthetic aestheticism where she was sleeping on the floor and wasn't able to pleasure herself and things like that. Yeah. So I totally missed him saying that about the sex magic. So that's probably why I thought he's going to take advantage of her.
I think that's why she was like prepared for it too. She was like, okay, where are we doing this? You know,
sex magic. I read up on this.
Right. And you said it. So I knew it was going to happen.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But I really enjoy him as a character. And
me too.
When he dies, it is devastating to me. It's probably the worst part of the movie for me. Because it's so sad and also fucking terrible. You know, I've said this before, but one of my things that I think is the most disturbing in some ways is in horror movies when people die and it's like an accident like this where, you know, they get into an altercation and he gets stabbed. And so it's like nobody's fault. Like nobody was like trying to do this. And then he dies a very slow, sad, terrible death because he gets an infection. It takes a long time. You know, they're in this house for months and months and months. And then he just finally, like, dies in the middle of the night. And it's just like, then she's totally alone. And it's a devastating part of the movie. I wasn't excited to rewatch it because I was like, this is terrible. I hate it.
Yeah, that was horrible. And when he pressed on his wound and it oozed out pus, I'm like, oh, shit, he's going. He's gone. He said in the beginning they don't leave, not even for medical stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Not for emergencies.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was sad. And he was just like, I think they fear me. And he was just breaking down. And
at the end, he wasn't like so scared.
That kind of an act of love-ish, he wasn't even willing to, well, I guess I was thinking he wasn't even willing to leave to save his own life. But then on the other end, he couldn't have leave. But then I was wondering, like, when does it end? Like, when can they leave? When she sees the angel? Is that like the final thing? So once that happens, okay, it's over and you can leave.
Yeah. They don't explain it in the movie, but in the Abra Melon operation, you talk to your guardian angel and then you have to like seal 12 kings of hell up. So there's
is that what the people were?
I don't know. I don't know if that's what they were supposed to be necessarily, but there is like, there's like a tie up that you have to do after you talk to your guardian angel. You have to like close all of the gates basically that you've opened to seal these, I think they're called the 12 kings of hell, so that then you're totally done.
Okay, so you got to tell me about this thing.
Okay.
I am so excited. Yeah, and sorry about my lighting. It's dark now.
I know, it's happening to me too. It's sun's going down.
I look maybe like the guardian angel in the movie.
At least you're lit well, yeah. Okay, yes. Yeah, so the ritual performed in the movie is the Abra Melon operation. They mention that. It is an occult rite attempted by Gnostics such as Aleister Crowley. The ritual is meant to obtain the knowledge and conversation of the ritualist's guardian angel. I did read some stuff about how guardian angel is said, but that it does normal, like a lot of people say that it actually just means like your higher self, like you're just accessing like a higher version of yourself. But it's interesting because they address that in the movie. He says, you'll read online that it's, you know, your higher self, but it's all bollocks. Like they're real. Angels and demons are real. So I think that's interesting because I feel like that is the take that the movie takes. That's the stance that the movie takes, is that they are real. And that's why you're physically seeing them at the end of the movie, which is cool. Okay, so anyways, let me tell you about the Book of Abramelin. So that's where this operation and ritual comes from. So it tells the story of an Egyptian mage named Abraham who taught a system of magic to Abraham of Worms, who was a Jew in Worms, Germany. The system of magic from this book regained popularity in the 19th and 20th centuries, partly due to Samuel Liddell MacGregor Mathers. That's a fucking long name. We will henceforth refer to him as Mathers. Translation, the Book of the Sacred Magic of Abramelin the Mage. So there's a bunch of stuff about this. And this is what I kind of just read a bunch about it, but I didn't take any notes. This operation is lengthy. It's like 18 months in Mather's translation of it, because it's originally from like a German text. And he found another French version of it that he then translated to English. And so it's like missing a bunch of information.
Oh,
and
is that says, why she had to know French and German in the movie?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But he, like, that translation is like 6 months, which is even a fucking long time. But there was like all kinds of stuff missing from it and whatever. So I think since then they've done a translation from some of the earlier German ones that are more complete. But like, that's a fucking long time, bro. 18 months. They don't say that in the movie. How long? They just say like months. But I mean, it's such a grueling for fucking months, dude. Like, he's like, or he says, I think 6 to 8 months. We'll need food for 6 to 8 months. And it takes so long. And you watch her get like doused with water. She's cold. She has to sleep on the ground while he sleeps on the bed. He's yelling at her.
They do that whole thing and they have to do it again if the angel doesn't show up.
Yep. Drinking
the
blood.
She got the house for 12 months.
Yep.
You know what? I wanted to mention, it was one of my notes. I found this very interesting too, how this is the first movie I saw where it takes months to access the other side. Usually it's very fast, right? You just do some things, you draw a thing, and then you're like, but ow, and then there's the thing.
Right.
But this was a process, which, I mean, you'd think it would be.
Yeah.
To access something like that. Other movies make it just seem so easy. You say some chants, maybe some meditation, maybe drink a potion. I don't know.
Yeah.
Make a triangle, bless the, you know, the different north, south, east, west. And there it is.
Yeah. It's almost like you like accidentally trip into like, you know, like, oops, I fucking opened a portal. You know,
yes.
Not this movie. This movie is like, you are intentionally doing this. You go through the process of doing it. You have to be like working at it and staying with it. And I think that, again, gives it the more reality. It feels like it's more of a real thing.
And is it to ask for a favor or just talk to your angel in general?
Yeah, it's for, quote, the knowledge and conversation of the ritualist's guardian angel. So I think it's like that they do get special knowledge and power. And in the movie, they say that they can ask a favor. So each one of them is supposedly able to ask that guardian angel for whatever favor they want.
Mm-hmm.
So knowledge and power, I would say.
He was happy she chose forgiveness, because that would be ultimately probably what an archangel would want you to choose.
Yeah,
not
probably.
Vengeance, right?
Yeah, but it makes me think that it would have granted that favor had she still wanted it.
Would she have left the depths of that hell
had she not?
Had she still been wanting vengeance?
Yeah, good question. I don't know. Probably not.
So maybe you don't see the angel unless you do, which makes sense of why you would need such a long process of kind of becoming anew. Because if you're just like, nah, I want that person to die, and you just do some chants and then you're angel and you're like, I want that person to die, and you'd be like, oh, bitch. You know, so.
yeah.
So maybe that is the key. You either, if you still, after all of that, are like, no, I want vengeance or just something dark, you stay in that pit. And if you don't, you're able maybe to break away.
Yeah. And I do, that's a good point about the him being happy with that, because I didn't really think about how, because the angel does smile when she asks for the power to forgive.
Yeah.
And maybe that is what that is he's like, okay, you've finally done enough. You've stripped away enough. You've gone through enough change that you are, now this is what you've asked for, and I will grant it.
Yeah, because we have free will. So maybe in that moment, there's still all this free will as you're walking up the stairs and you get to the room with him. Now that you're out of that bad situation, I suppose you could still change your mind. Then I wonder what would happen.
Yeah.
Like if you ask the angel for something bad.
I also read something about the angel being portrayed as the way that angels have been written. I don't remember where, but like big, beautiful and royal looking.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked the eyes. The eyes were like,
yeah,
white and flashy. I don't know how to describe it, but they were like reflective almost.
Yeah, it was really pretty.
Yeah. So what else about this operation? It like is all based around magic squares, which I don't know if you remember what this is, but it's like, it's where numbers in a grid add up to the same number across and down. But for this operation, they actually use like words that relate to the thing that you're trying to accomplish. So for example, a square entitled to walk underwater for as long as you want contains the word, I have no idea how to say this, M-A-I-A-M, the Hebrew word for water. Or like a square for recovering treasures begins with the word Tiferah, which means golden ring in Hebrew.
Hmm.
So there's like these magic word squares, and I don't remember much about like the other specifics of the operation, but there's a lot going on.
Where were these word squares? Were they in the movie?
Like, they weren't actually. And that's one of the things that I have as a piece of trivia. So people have said that this is like an error, but director Liam Gavin chose not to depict some parts of the ritual and asked artists to change the symbols out of superstition and respect for the process.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So what if they were actually like had all this stuff like written out on the ground and stuff?
Yeah. I do like how they have all the like the big circles and everything. Yeah, it like looks really cool. I watched an interview with him talking about how that was part of what drew him to this story, is that you have this physical thing that you can kind of put together, like the house and the symbols and the drawings and everything, that give you a really rich base for like the cinematography, which I think is like spot on. It's really pretty. I love that shot, that over the head shot of her laying in the triangle and mm-hmm. him like painting on her back with all the candles. Like there's some really awesome shots in this movie. I feel like the cinematography is really good.
I totally agree. It was so beautiful. All this different ritual stuff that they had and were doing. I actually, I study with rabbis like 4 hours a week. And the last time I met with the rabbi, we actually talked about he mentions it, the the Kabbalah diagram of, you know, the upper and the bottom, and it meets in the middle and all this. And he was kind of describing it a little bit. We weren't meeting just about that, but he was talking about it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I just want to know more about that. I actually have a necklace of that.
Oh, okay.
A symbol.
Yeah. And it does seem like it's integrated in that a little bit.
Yeah, it totally is. It just isn't as many circles.
Yeah.
It's like fewer circles in the movie than the actual one.
And that's the tree of life, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we talked about this in the offering, because there is similar, visual symbols used in that movie. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And same thing, kind of that thing on the ground, at least in the offering, where there is it's like the Seal of Solomon or something like that. I don't remember exactly, but Solomonic imagery and stuff is also seems to be pulled in here for some inspiration. So
So cool. Now I'm going to research all of this.
Yeah. I have some resources that I'll send your way, and I'll put in the Discord as well.
Awesome.
One of the videos that I watched, I think was from a Jewish professor, maybe, doctor something. So maybe he just has a doctorate and doesn't teach, but, he had a lot of good information. It was cool. So I'll send that to you. And I think the more recent version was done by a rabbi, maybe, the recent translation of this book that's like more complete. Now it's too dark and your background is freaking me out. I need you to turn on a light.
Jeez, I didn't even realize it because I'm staring at you the whole time. And then I just looked at myself. And I'm like, oh my God, I am scary. Okay, hold on.
Whew, that's way better. I was like, you got a real dark corner back there and it is
spooky.
Scaring me. okay. So that's all the stuff that I at least wrote down about the Aubrey Mellon operation. Do you have any questions about that before I tell you a little bit about Aleister Crowley?
No, I'm good.
Okay. And I couldn't actually find a lot about that. Like, I looked up Aleister Crowley because I had seen a note that he had attempted this operation. So I was like trying to find information about him doing it and what happened. And then I ended up just falling down the Aleister Crowley like rabbit hole and like wasn't able to pull myself back out to go back to the Aubrey Mellon operation. But I couldn't find much about it there either. And I just ended up learning a lot about fucking Crowley. So he was a person who was like an occultist, and he lived in like the late 1800s, like early 1900s. He was alive until like 1947, I think, is when he died. And so he's like more of a modern. Well, first of all, I didn't even realize that he was like an actual person. I thought it was just I thought it might be a made up person because I've only heard references to him in movies and stuff. So I was like, I wasn't even sure that he was real, but he was. And he died more modern than I thought. Notes on him. You know, when you do research, it's just like too much information even to like pull out and put down. You're like, I just read through all of this. And so I'm going to try to do it off the top of my head, but it's hard because there's a lot. But he was an occultist, philosopher, ceremonial magician, poet, painter, novelist, and mountaineer. And he founded the religion of Thelema, I don't even know if I'm saying that right, identifying himself as a prophet entrusted with guiding humanity into the Aeon of Horus in the early 20th century.
There's a lot going on there.
There's a lot. There's so much. I didn't even read the whole Wikipedia page, and like, I already know so much information. Anyway, we'll come back to him. But he did try this in the Bolskine House, which is a location in Scotland that has like a bunch of historical stuff tied to it. And so it's like a pretty famous house. But he bought it in like 1899, I think. And it's on the shore of the Loch Ness. And this house like has the, or maybe it has some of the things tied to it. Like it faces the right direction and all of that. So I heard that he tried to do it in this house, but he only made it like a month in and then left because the group of like occultists that he was part of had some like political drama and infighting that he had to like go back to London, I think, to try to get it under control. That was the dawn of the Golden Order, which was actually founded by Mathers, the guy who translated this book first. So he founded the Golden Order of the Dawn. Am I saying that right?
And so he was able to leave even though they started the thing.
Yeah. I couldn't find any more information about it, except that people believe that he left too early and didn't seal it. And so some negative things got out into the world. And one of them is the Loch Ness Monster. So that's a nice little tidbit for you.
Really?
Yeah.
This little monster that no one's actually really seen, who just floats around. Yeah. This is the evil stuff.
That we, I know.
I would think evil. You would say like serial killers, Hitler, like, I don't know, like really yeah. horrible things, but it's little Nessie floating around. Yeah.
Little Nessie out
not
here.
Not causing any trouble whatsoever. Maybe even like a Sasquatch that sometimes yeah. people take pictures of. These are the creatures coming out of the scary opening.
Right.
That's the funny. Opening.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my
why
skeptical
do
ass.
They think that about the Nessie?
I don't know. It's weird. And my skeptical ass just feels like this is like a big nothing, right? Like all of this occult magic, whatever. Is it really, there isn't much to it, but that's me and my skepticalness.
I think there's definitely power and focus and focused energy. However, I don't think I buy into that anybody with intense focus can cause harm to somebody else, so can interfere with someone else's free will and someone else's,
yeah,
you know, I mean, unless you physically go and be a monster to them, but yeah,
well,
that's curious.
And to be clear too, like, I think if you lock yourself up in a house and you put yourself through rigorous amounts of fasting, physical pain and torture and, you know, all kinds of just things, I don't doubt that you probably have some sort of
enlightenment.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's why I think the idea of your like guardian angel being a higher version of yourself, like, I don't think that is nothing. I think there could be something really to that. But I, you know, the idea.
It's kind of what, like, Buddha did, right? Buddha, he tried to find the path to freedom to suffering by abstaining from everything, then overindulging in everything. And that, like, he did this whole path to finding enlightenment. So that makes sense.
Yeah. But, and, like, I think, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I had wondered if a part of this was us wondering if this is all really happening, or she's eating mushrooms, she's also sleep deprived, starving, you know, all of these extremes, you, I think, would start to lose your mind and then maybe yeah. come to some enlightenment. So are these things really happening, or is this what she's seeing?
Yeah, totally, totally. And I mean, Aleister Crowley himself did a bunch of drugs. Like, he was on heroin, I think, multiple times. Mm. He experimented a lot. Like, he was like a very free bird.
Free bird.
Sexually, with, you know, drugs, anything. This guy was just, yeah, doing whatever he fucking wanted at any moment in time. And so it is sort of like, you know, using drugs as a way to achieve some sort of enlightenment. Also, I think is not nothing. I think there are things that happen there, you know, but I think the actual occult, like, I don't think that's as real, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. But
yeah, yeah, it does.
Yeah. So he also, there was like a lot of this throughout his life. Like, he tried to do other type of rituals. I think one of them's called like the Bornless ritual. I don't know what that entails. I didn't look it up, but like, he did that a lot to talk to his like guardian angel. And I think he had tried this, this Abramelin one other time, but I think at some point he got into a fight with Mathers. They were once friends. They got into a fight, and I think he might have like forbid him from trying the Abramelin again because there's some quote I read. Yeah, I know there's some quote I read about him saying like, "Well, if my friendship is, you know, I have to give up the Abramelin for that, then so be it," or something.
Who is he to tell you you can't do it just because he translated it?
I know, it's weird, but let me say this: after reading so much about Crowley, I'm like, this guy just seems fucking annoying. Like, I don't like this person. I would have a problem with him. Like, he's just annoying. And so let me tell you a little bit about that. When he bought the Bolskein house, he developed a love of Scottish culture, which I think is fine. But he described himself.
Sorry. Which, by the way, anyone who likes Scottish culture, that's fine.
That's totally fine. I know that's you, Felicia. I know that's you. But he like referred to himself as the Laird of Bolskine and took to wearing traditional Highland dress even during visits to London. So I'm like, okay, give it a rest.
Yeah.
A little bit. Because you're not Scottish. And then, so reading all about this, right? Like, he, like, fought with people all the time. He, like, cheated on everybody all the time. He just, I feel like he's such a good example of, if you remember, in Barbarian, the director, I think the director, Zach Cregger, said of, after reading that book, what's that fucking book? The Gift of Fear.
Mm-hmm.
Am I saying that right?
The Gift of Fear?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love that book. Is that the book you're talking about?
Yes. Yes. So okay. Zach Cregger read that book and then created Barbarian from the experience of reading that book. And one of the things that he said was that, you know, women have to be super careful, whereas men just blast their way through life. And I feel like Aleister Crowley is like a perfect example of just like blasting your way through life. Like, he just is like doing whatever the fuck he wants all the time, no matter what. It's crazy reading his shit. So he, like, you know, joined this golden order of the Dawn or whatever. And like, but then got in a fight with the leader, like left and created his own. But then that didn't work out. So he created another one. And I think that kind of got a little fucky. So then he created another one. Like, he's just out here, you know, big ego, making fucking religions, getting people to follow him.
Oh, I just looked up a picture of him.
Yeah. Like, in the robes.
Yeah, this guy.
Is that what you're looking at?
This guy.
I know. This fucking guy. So here, so I'm like reading all of this information about his life, right? And I'm thinking to myself, this guy seems so annoying. I hate him. And then I found this paragraph, which I feel like is does a really good job of summoning or summarizing why he's annoying. So Crowley considered himself to be one of the outstanding figures of his time. No shit. I'm sure he fucking did. The historian, The historian Ronald Hutton stated that in Crowley's youth, he was a self-indulgent and flamboyant young man who set about a deliberate flouting of and provocation of social and religious norms, while being shielded from an outraged public opinion by his inherited wealth. Hutton also described Crowley as having both an unappeasable desire to take control of any organization that he belonged to and a tendency to quarrel savagely with those who challenged him.
You said that, and I just saw this picture of when he was younger.
Yeah, totally. Look at this, like, dick.
Perfect of.
Look at him.
Rich background, doesn't have to fucking do anything, but
yeah,
be a douchebag.
Dude, yeah. I'm telling it's you, amazing. I mean, reading, I've never looked into Aleister Crowley, so maybe there is, but I was wondering, I'm like, it would be interesting to watch some kind of documentary about this guy or something. Yeah. Like, there must be something out there that exists.
Ooh, there's gotta be.
He did so much. He every fucking paragraph is like, oh, he flew to fucking Nepal to climb mountains, and then some people died on his mountain trip and he blamed the mountaineering community. It's like, great, thanks, Aleister Crowley. Then it's like, flew to fucking, you know, New Jersey and founded a fucking religious order, or flew back to fucking Bolskine House in Scotland and cheated on his wife and named his next daughter after his mistress. Like, I'm just like, this guy, I fucking can't with his ass, but he does seem like a fucking wealthy background ass hopping around, just doing whatever, doing heroin. Smoking Dude, weed in Nepal.
Loved to chill with P. Diddy.
Yeah. Fucking do whatever you want.
Like. Allegedly, of course.
Allegedly.
Oh, man.
Anyway, so you can fucking read a whole very long Wikipedia page about Aleister Crowley. He also helped, like, some in the military. And at, I don't know, one of the times he offered to help and they were like, no, thanks, which I thought was funny. I dislike this person who lived a century ago, and I don't even know him, but he seems fucking annoying. So
that's funny.
That's that.
That was fun. That was a fun ride and interesting. I've heard the name, but I didn't really know much about him.
Yeah. I feel like I still don't know a whole lot. I really actually would like to watch
I would love to watch a documentary. I'm going to look to see if there is one. If I find one, I'll tell you. And if not, okay. documentary filmmakers. Let's do this. I mean, they're not fucking, me, but you guys do it.
I can't. I don't. Yeah. I don't have the time. I don't have the time for that.
I will make the time to watch it though. So,
let's see. That was all I had trivia wise.
Cool.
Was there anything else that you had that you wondered about or anything?
No, I love how you shared all of that and what that was. I'm going to look it up. I'm going to do deeper research. The only other thing note I had was, oh, I think they're going to find that body.
Yeah, I thought you were going to think that.
Yes. I was like, they know you rented the house for a year and now there is a body that is going to surface. It will. Unless there's something I'm missing by how she wrapped it. But it floated pretty lightly and then went underneath. It's going to come back up.
Yeah.
I would assume someone's going to find that body and it's going to go right back to you, my friend. And you're not going to be able to go, oh, there was demons and my angel. And that's what I thought when she pushed that body so carelessly into the water.
I had the same thought.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
You're like going to spend the rest of your life in prison. How are you going to explain that?
How are you going to explain this? Yeah. Because it looks like you stabbed him and then he died.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
And then you threw his body in the lake. I was thinking it did sink. So I kind of thought to myself, like, I wonder if she was all, this is off screen. I wonder if she was like, I'd like the power to forgive. And can you also make sure that nobody finds that body so that I don't ever go to jail for this?
Oh, yeah. Maybe that was divine intervention. I'm probably using that that term in the wrong way. But like, oh, right. We're going to dispose of all the evidence. And now you can move on with your life.
Yeah, because I mean, wondered for real.
Why that it had gone under, because I don't think it would have. It was completely wrapped in plastic. Why all of a sudden did it sink?
Yeah, which felt kind of intentional, doesn't it? It is sort of like, whoop, goes under. And so I did think that maybe that was part of it. Because earlier, remember, when he gets stabbed, he says, this is my punishment for harming you. This is your guardian angel basically getting me back. It's the price I have to pay.
Okay.
And it made me think that the guardian angel is looking after her, you know, through this whole process and probably outside of it even.
Yeah, sure you're reborn, but sorry, you're going to get convicted of murder.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, I buy that. That makes sense.
Yeah, well, that'll be our, like, headcanon for how this goes.
Yes.
That way she doesn't have to explain anything to police.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah, I really like the last bit of the movie, too, where she's driving out and she passes a car and there's this, like, she's startled by it and we're startled by it as the audience as well, because we've been so isolated and alone and away from people. And even when she leaves the house, she sees no one and ends up back at the house. So like, that was an interesting moment at the end of the movie where you're like, oh, she's back.
Yes.
In life.
I'm so glad you said that, because I had that same reaction.
Yeah.
Like immediately, just that small, small thing of, oh, there's another car on the road. And you're like, oh, okay, we're here. It's done.
Yeah.
And she's moving on now.
You see it on her face. The fucking the relief kind of and the shock.
Can you imagine if you had a sister and she came back to you and you knew she did this thing after all this time and her fingers were missing? And
oh, my God. Yeah. It would be like,
just don't ask me any questions. All right. OK.
Yeah. The whole family would be like, we don't know what happened, but we don't ask anymore.
Would you even want her around? Like, I'd be kind of scared that she might be, like, bringing some scariness. But I'd be curious, like, if she's like, no, it worked and I saw my angel. I'd be like, but she also was saying she did mushrooms.
Right.
Like, all right. Well, if you're feeling better, that's good.
You know what? Yeah, we're not going to look a gift horse in the mouth here. We're just going to let you live your life then.
Hopefully she could be a good aunt now and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Family misses you.
When your niece and nephew ask you what happened to your hands, let's just, like, you know.
Let's just lie. Yeah.
Cooking accident, something.
Can you tell them that you were not being careful with knives
when
you were cooking dinner? Thank you.
You were running with knives or scissors, and then they'll never do it again. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. The only other thing I had in my notes, I absolutely love the script for this movie. Like, the dialogue is so good and like concise. I like that there's not a lot of dialogue, and the dialogue that's there, it feels very like blunt at times, which I think really works. I wrote down when he says in the beginning, "I live a hard life. I abuse alcohol. I'm DTing." Like, that was it. And it was such a blunt and a clinical almost line to deliver to her. And I really like the exchanges between them in the beginning when we're kind of establishing this world and this operation. And he says, you know, what we're doing is much darker. Like, all of these things, I just felt like it was so good.
Yeah, I agree. Really, really good.
Oh, and the score is really, really good and oppressive and dreadful is what I wrote.
Yes, I agree. And this is like just a side note for me that sometimes struggles with an understanding accents at first. It had a very thick accent, he did, but I was able to understand him completely. I didn't need to put on the
subtitles.
Mm-mm. Wow. I liked that.
Okay.
I mean, that's you know, from my point of view, not that he needed to adjust his accent or anything, but I liked that I could understand what he was saying.
We turned it on and like 20 seconds in, Jay and I were like, oh, you got to turn on these fucking subtitles. So quiet. Well, and we just don't turn it up very loud either.
Yeah, I had it up loud because I was watching it on my own. And so.
Yeah. Oh, that barking dog. I meant to look up something about that, but I totally forgot. I felt like I had read something about the barking dog at some point, and I don't know if it was supposed to be, maybe it was like that demon, because the dog.
There was a dog demon.
Right.
Downstairs, there was.
Yeah.
She only saw its feet, but it was there.
And it felt like it was the dog that was like coming to get her, the sun voice, but I felt like it was one and the same, like it was one entity doing all of that. And so that was interesting that it was like outside at first. Remember how he was like, do you hear that dog?
It was approaching. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It was arriving.
Mm-hmm. Because it's outside at first and then it comes in. He's like, we're miles from anybody. Nobody's out here with a dog. I was like, ew.
The shit they're doing is calling in the Loch Ness monster.
The Loch Nessie. She's in there. But God, that is something that I really love about this movie is just how fucking... like slow. It's such a slow burn.
Slow burn, yeah.
Which can be rough for some people, and especially if you're not in the right mindset to sit and like be watching a slow burn movie. But I love how the things really start slow. They're like knocks here and there. Mm-hmm. And then like right before he dies, she sees somebody sitting in the chair smoking a cigarette.
Oh God, I loved that scene. Oh, I got cold chills when you mentioned that.
I know, it's so good. Oh. And like she can hear people like talking, chanting, like knocking happening. Like it kind of ramps up as it goes on. Doors are opening by themselves, but it feels so much more sinister than like a normal haunted house movie, because you know that they're not dealing with just fucking ghosts. They're dealing with like demons and angels, like unlimited power. Like they're stepping into like the beyond. Like it's such a, I don't know, it's such a different feel to me than other movies for that reason. And it makes it so much scarier. Like when she's like staring into like that dark hallway and like, there's so much of this movie that I feel like works so well as a horror movie in the front end. We didn't even like really get into any of that. But I just think if you haven't seen this movie, you fucking need to as a horror fan, because there's so much good stuff without it being jump scares.
So well said. Because I love how it's almost the more and more they do this ritual, it's being drawn to them, but it's almost like they're in darkness and they're trying to find its way, like the knocking and trying to find its way. And then finally it breaks through and that's when they're able to grab them. I loved the slow burn. I thought it was brilliantly done. That's why I was disappointed with the people.
Yeah.
Because when he died... And there was at one point I said, I looked over at Steve. He wasn't watching it, but he was in the room with me. And I said, we're at the top of the roller coaster. So it was like that clink, 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 clink going up. And I'm like, last 20 minutes, shit's about to get real.
Yeah.
That's why when it was them, I was ready to just start free falling down the roller coaster. And I didn't feel like that's what happened.
Yeah, I agree. The payoff really wasn't what it could have been. And I think that is because it's just such a low budget film. But it did remind, I also wrote down that it reminds me of a handful of movies that do the same thing. Suspiria, Baskin, As Above, So Below. Like all of those movies, and I won't say anything beyond that to not spoil it, but there is a love.
Audition.
Audition, yes, is a good one. Where you reach this pinnacle and then it is a free fall into total chaos. And I just think it was hard to execute with a low budget here.
Yeah.
And I honestly think most of the time that doesn't work for me, which is kind of why I don't like it here either. I do love the movie, and I think it, you know, it did the best job it could have with its budget. So like, yeah. I forgive it, but I did also want, like, I don't know. It's like, maybe I wanted to see no one. Because they did such a good job of making everything so scary without seeing anything up until that point. So then I think you got to go one way or the other. You got to either go all the fucking way, like Suspiria, where you're like, what the fuck am I looking at? You know? Or you got to go.
That was so great. Oh, shit. That was so great.
So great. Or you got to go the other way where you're like, you're still not seeing something, but crazy shit's happening anyway, you know?
Yeah, the voices, the noises, the shadow creature were all very scary. So maybe, I don't know, more of that. She's being grabbed and dragged. So maybe we just really can't make the things out very well. That's way scarier, in my opinion.
I agree.
Just seeing these flashes, something's holding her down. Our fingers are getting clipped off. You know, just what the fuck? This is terrifying. That would be more terrifying. But
yeah.
All right.
Agree. Okay. Are you ready to rate this?
Yes. I'm going to give this a 3.9.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I was going back between 3.9 and 4. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I don't know. Because the movies that are in those two scores are all so different. And then I saw Possum. And I was like, oh, yeah. I think.
What did you get Possum?
3.9.
Oh, okay. So,
and same. I was like, I feel like it's the same because I really liked that movie. So I feel like that's the same score. So I'm going to do a 3.9. I definitely knew. So Tawny, thank you for this experience. I was like, I like it more than The Offering and I liked it more than Ritual.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So 3.9 for me.
Okay. I also looked back at those and was like, I think I like it more than those movies. So... same thought process. I'm going to give it a 4. So I'm really, really close. Nice. And I just like love it. But I was like, maybe I can't go up to like 4.25. I gave that to like Infinity Pool, which was, I think, my favorite horror movie of last year. So I don't think I could go quite that high because I have some issues with it. But God, I do love this movie. And I've thought about it a lot since the first time I watched it. Years ago, I think I must have watched it in like 2017, right after it probably came out. So,
yeah, I was wondering if it would sit with me more because I gave Barbarian a 4, and so I was thinking maybe not go quite up to a 4, but that was a tough one because I did really like it. I think for sure I would have been 4 or higher. If that ending paid off more with the dark stuff, if that paid off more, then hands down, I would have.
Yeah, because they do just look like people with paint. Like, and everything else felt so grounded and so scary and so unknown.
Can you imagine when she was in the hallway and she had the candle and she was walking towards that dark and she kind of lifted it? And then if there was something like that shadow creature that was smoking a cigarette or something like that, where your eyes are just catching this glimpse of something, you don't know what it is, how amazing that would have been versus, oh, there's a bunch of people.
Yeah. Yeah, it really deflates, kind of.
Yes, you're like, oh, that would have raised it up for me,
yeah,
for sure. Probably even over a 4, but
yeah. But it's a great, great low budget movie. almost probably no budget. I don't actually know what the budget is, but I know it's really low. And like directorial debut, like
yeah,
great movie. And so I gotta give props.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Points for that. So yeah, cool. What are we don't know where we're watching next week.
We have no idea.
Or
I don't think I keep we can next week, but continue on with things that remind us of
the offering.
I think we need a new thing now.
Yeah.
I don't know what though.
I feel like that was a good like trio of movies though, back to back for sure. Like, cause we had, you know, The Offering, The Ritual, and A Dark Song, and they all just had, there was like thematically some cool shit that would tie together.
We killed it. If anything, my pick, maybe I could have picked something more in line with the other two, but they still worked. We killed it on this random theme series.
Yeah, this run.
Ooh, so we're going to have to think of something else. Refresh.
Yeah.
A reboot.
Yeah.
We'll think about it.
Yeah.
But, and we'll let you know on social media. If you like us, please do go follow us at Two Chicks at a Horror Flick on Instagram. Or you can go to any of your favorite social media platforms and search for Two Chicks and a Horror Flick, and we'll be there. What else, Tani?
Don't forget to get 20% off of Magic Mind at magicmind.com/jan2chicks and use our promo code 2chicks20. But that's it for now. So we'll see you next time and have such a good night. No nightmares.